What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, it's Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast. We have a very special episode for you guys now. Director Peter Farrelly is joining the show to talk about his new comedy, Ricky Stanicky. It features John Cena in the title role and taps into a lot of the reasons that we find John Cena to be incredibly funny in these raunchy comedies. I love that he goes for broke on a number of these things. And while you probably wouldn't assume the John Cena is the guy to pair with Peter Farrelly after the way that he collaborated with Ben Stiller and Jim Carrey, it turns out that the two of them sort of speak the same language and their comedy mesh really, really well in this film, Ricky Stanicky. It's definitely worth giving a shot. But the beauty of having Peter Farrelly come on a show like Real Blend is that he has this incredible career that we were able to just sort of sit down and go film to film and talk about the different things that he's accomplished, how he got into the industry, the challenge to sort of stay in the industry, and then how comedy has evolved over the years. I think you guys are really going to like this interview with Peter Farrelly. We're really, really happy to have him on the Real Blend podcast. So without further ado, let's jump into comedic legend Peter Farrelly joining the Real Blend podcast on this week's episode. So I am Sean, and that is Jake. We are two-thirds of the Real Blend podcast. One of our guys is stuck in traffic, so we're going to carry the load. Gabe is our producer. The other guy is Kevin McCarthy. He's with Fox 5 in Washington, D.C.
I think that'll be the ninth Kevin McCarthy I've known in my life.
Really? Yeah, that's true. You do have a very famous Kevin McCarthy.
But he would be the best. I'm going to go on record saying
he doesn't have a lot of competition. I'll give him that.
So we're junketeers who hate the 4-minute time slot. And we set up
this. I did it yesterday.
Podcast to.
Right. You're in Chicago, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That's right. Like that?
So
I was just about to say, that's a steel trap of a memory you've got.
Well, I know that William Macy at the end said, I got to remember that guy. He made a big point of, you know, trying to remember you.
Oh, that's cool. That's awesome. Yeah. That made my day.
Yeah. Because you're going to be at the event with him in a couple of weeks, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Jake's head just got bigger. Terrific. Thank you for that. So we want to just dive right in and we want to talk about the new film and we want to talk about your career. And I want to start here, if you don't mind. We're in the midst of Oscar season. We're doing this show on a weekly basis. We talk a lot about what an Oscar campaign, the nominations, a win, what kind of doors it can open. You know, nowadays, do people even go out to see the Oscar nominees? You know, does it get that boost that it used to get? As someone who is already established and probably able to get doors open anyway, like what kind of impact did Green Book winning Best Picture have on you?
You know, that's I'm not sure. I guess it didn't hurt, but I never, you know, it was. It's always hard. It's like I explained. I think we were talking about this yesterday with Jake, but. It's a hard, you know, like this movie took 10 to 15 years to get made. Dumb and Dumber took 5 years to get made. And it was the exact same script that got made. And, you know, Something About Mary was a 10-year-old script that my brother and I rewrote from friends of ours, Ed Dechter and John Strauss. Green Book, you know, the same thing. Like you, it wasn't easy. Everybody was like, well, yeah, it's a race movie and those don't travel overseas. And so that was hard. They're all hard. So I never even after like massive hits, you they don't roll out the carpet. It's still, you know, there's thousands and thousands of people trying to get movies made, and it's not nobody's got a free ride. Spielberg gets pushed back sometimes, I guarantee you.
Wow. You wouldn't assume that.
Yeah, I remember someone telling me, I was at a party and someone said, you know, we were talking about a movie I was trying to make, and someone told me I'm putting myself into a story that actually happened to someone else, like as you do. But anyway, someone told me they were at a party and they were talking about a movie they were trying to make and couldn't get it made. And someone said, well, that guy over there is having the same issue. And it was Tom Hanks. Oh. He goes, what? He goes, yeah, he has this general, he's done a lot of World War II stuff, but he has this one general that's unknown and he wants to do this movie about him. And it's hard. People are like, eh, you've already done a bunch of movies. It certainly doesn't hurt, but it didn't change things. If anything, it kind of freaked me out, the whole process of it. Cause we just wrote a movie that we thought was going to be fun. We certainly weren't going into it expecting awards. And we didn't know what we had. I remember we did our first test screening and afterwards, the people who do the test screening and the studio were standing there in the corner and they're all talking. I was like, uh-oh, what happened? You know, because they had the scores and they looked very concerned. And we walked over and said, what's going on? And they go, it's just kind of unusual. I said, what happened? They said, we got 100. I said, what? They said, 100%. I was like, that's awesome. And they're like, yeah, it's just unusual. We're going to have to redo it. yeah, we're going to have to redo it. So they did it like 3 nights later at a whole different place. And they got a 99. One asshole didn't give it, you know. So we didn't really know going in. You know, we were just trying to make a good movie. And we certainly weren't going in for all that stuff. I'm glad it happened, I guess.
You created one of the most indelible images that I had put to cinema, which is Vigo folding an entire pizza in half. I will never forget that as long as I live. As a native New Yorker,
that was on the day.
Horrifying.
By the way, I don't think that was in the script. I think that day, Nick Vallelonga, whose father was Tony Lip, he said, you know, my father used to always, he would ask him, don't cut the pizza. And he would take the pizza and cut it in half. And Vigo was, oh, we got to do it. I'll tell you the truth. I kind of was like, I don't know, guys. Is that getting goofy? Like, are we being silly? And they're like, no. Let's do it. Okay, yeah, let's do it. So we did it.
It's amazing. Wow.
That is incredible. Speaking of the Oscars, I'm very happy that you made Ricky. And I want to flash back to the night when you won multiple Oscars. And I remember you standing on that stage. And as someone who grew up with the comedies that you and your brother made in the 90s, I remember pausing and thinking, well, shit, I hope that doesn't mean he's going to stop making comedies because like I grew up on those. I hope that doesn't mean he's going to, you know, keep. And I don't get me wrong. I love Green Book. But I was like, I hope that we still get those. So you making Ricky makes me very happy. And I'm sort of curious. Was that a conscious decision? Did you ever have to tell yourself like, OK, like, yes, I've got a pair of these golden bad boys, but like I'm still going to make the comedies that make me laugh and make me happy.
Yeah. I'm not a good planner, by the way, at all. Like, and I talk about this, how like, you know, if you look at Rob Reiner's first four movies, after he did those movies, people realized he could do anything. First one was Spinal Tap, crazy, great comedy. Second one was The Sure Thing, which is a nice romantic comedy, really sweet romantic. Then he did Stand By Me, kid's story about a thing. And then he did A Few Good Men. And by this fourth movie, you're looking at this guy like he's being hired for any movie in town. We did comedy, 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 because that's just kept coming to us, do comedies. And so we would only get hired for comedies. And that's why when I tried to do Green Book, they were like, I don't know, man, you've done only comedies. I'm like, yeah, well, this is a different thing. So we've never consciously, like I'm telling you, the only reason I did Green Book is I bumped into my friend Brian Curry, who is a, he's a, an actor. And I said, what's up? He goes, I'm writing a screenplay. I said, oh, great. What's it about? He said, my friend's father drove, he was kind of a racist guy in the early 60s, Italian guy, and he drove a black concert pianist through the South in like 1962 when they became friends. I said, fucking home run, man. He goes, really? I said, home run. That's such a great story. It's amazing. I thought about it for like 2 months. I was thinking, man, that's a really good story. And finally, I called him back. I said, hey, what's going on with that script you told me about? He goes, what script? I said, the one you told me about, you're writing. He goes, which one did I tell you I'm writing? I'm like, the one with the concert pianist. I think, oh, we haven't begun it. I said, if you let me, if you can let me join in, let's start on Monday. I have like 6 weeks right now where we could kick off a draft. And I love that story. He said, great. So he introduced me to Nick and off we went. But I only did it because, you know, it was just a great story. And that's why I did Stanicky. And, you know, like there's one now that the probably the next thing I do is a thing called Balls Up, which is written by, oh God,
Red Reese and Paul Wernick. I was going to ask you about
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. Who are like the funniest guys ever. They wrote Deadpool.
Amazing.
They wrote, you know, Zombieland. And, you know, again, someone sent me the script and I read it and I was like, this is hysterical. It's nonstop laughs from beginning to end. It's like a no brainer. Of course, I've got to do it. But if somebody had, you know, it could have been, you know, about something else. And I guess I'm at the mercy of the universe.
I would love to tell you just a quick story really quick. I was just telling Sean, whenever I walked out, because I used to drive my parents crazy rewatching Dumb and Dumber over and over and over again. And when I took my mom to a press screening of Green Book, and when she walked out, she goes, I seriously think that might be one of the best movies I've ever seen in my entire life. And I said, well, Mom, you know who made that movie? The guy that made Dumb and Dumber. And very factually, with all the confidence in the world, she goes, no, he didn't. And then just kept walking. I'm still not sure that she's convinced.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So watching Ricky Snicky, I just kept thinking about it. It's a great premise about these guys who have to keep this innocent white lie going, or not so innocent white lie. And I kept thinking about you as a producer. And it's kind of funny that you talk about that, you know, the story idea. And then you asked him what happened to it. He's like, oh, I haven't even really started writing it yet. But he had pitched you on it already. Like, how often in this business do you have to keep a white lie kind of going in order to keep a green lit, you know, project still lit and moving up, moving forward?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. You have to, I mean, you have to, okay. When let's start with Dumb and Dumber. Now, I never went to film school. I never, I never shot a commercial. I never shot a short film. I never shot anything, music video. And yet when we got to Dumb and Dumber, we had written a script a few years earlier. My brother, we wrote this script about Cub Scouts that was really good. And we handed it in. It was 20th Century Fox. And they said they greenlit it right away. And they gave it to some director. And I'm not even going to mention the thing because we ended up pulling our names off it. But the guy changed everything. He had this script. We've actually considered redoing this script. It's so good. But this guy changed everything, went in, made another movie. They showed it to us. They're like, this is terrible. That's not what we did. And so we pulled our names off it. And I'm telling you, my agents at the time, I'd been out here like 6, 7, 8 years. And my agents were like, no, you need a credit. You've got zero credits. I said, no, I'd rather go to my grave with no credits than that one. I don't want that credit. And they really twisted our arms, like, you should take it. I said, no, I'm not putting my name on that. That's embarrassing. I'm not doing it. And we didn't. So Dumb and Dumber comes along, and my agent had suggested, well, when they ask who's going to direct it, tell them you are. And I was like, okay. And I sit down with Jim Carrey. We finally, after 5 years, have somebody who wants to make it. And Jim goes, who's directing? I said, me. And he goes, all right. And then never questioned it. So I keep waiting for the studio to say, Pete, what do you have, a reel, or you got something you can show us, or, you know, anything? Never happened. I actually went to a friend of mine who had gone to UCLA film school, a guy named Mark Stylin, and I said, hey, do you have like a reel from film school? Yeah. I said, if I need it, can I borrow it? Because they may ask me for a reel. I swear to God. They never did. They never did. And then suddenly it's the night before we're filming it, And we're up in altitude. We're shooting up and we're in Breckenridge, Colorado. We're at like 9,600 feet. I was in LA the day before. I can't breathe, can't take. And I started having a massive panic attack. My brother's like, calm down. I think we don't know what we're doing. I knew Jerry Zucker, David Zucker, the Zucker brothers and Jim.
Sure. Yeah.
We had worked with them. I said, David, we're supposed to start a movie tomorrow. I'm directing. I've never directed. What? Give me some advice. He goes, oh, don't worry about it. It's nothing. He goes, you wrote the script, right? I said, yeah, I wrote the script. He goes, yeah, well, then you know what you want. He goes, just don't lie to anybody about, like, act like you know camera lenses. He goes, to this day, I don't know lenses. I'll just say, okay. You know, look in the monitor, and if they're too close, say, can you make them look further away? Change the lens, you know? And they did. And but that night he goes, and you got to be honest with your first AD and your DP, your director of photography. So those guys, we sat down and said, guys, we don't know what we're doing. We know the script inside out. We've been living with it. I know the performances, but I don't know when to yell action. I really don't. And you guys got to like help. And they're like, okay. And they did. And that guy, JB Rogers, my first AD, still my first AD. And like he's, you know, now we know a little more, but we don't know everything.
You figured out when to call action.
He calls action now. He just said, I let him call action. But
wait, I want to know, are you a director that asks for a bunch of takes or do you kind of know when you have it?
I know when I have it. That's, you know, one thing, if I could give anybody advice about being a director, is you got to be very decisive. Like I know when I got it. And but I also believe that, like, if the actor doesn't know they have it, they'll go, well, I'll go again. Like, I always come to them, I say, I love it. Are you good? And if they say, yeah, if you're good, great, we move on. But if they say, I don't feel like I got it, so let's do it again. Because I don't want them lying in bed at night thinking, you know what, I could have done better, but Pete rushed me along. I didn't get to do my best take. So I'll always let them do that. But they generally, if you come up and say, excellent, that's it, ready to go, they're like, sure, and you move on. I don't I will do like 10, 15 takes if I have to, but normally I do like 3 takes.
Wow. Gotcha.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Peter, I promise I'm not going to sit here and just tell you stories the whole podcast, but I was on assignment in Estes Park, Colorado, shooting a story on the hotel that inspired Stephen King to write The Shining. And whenever I walked in, I'm looking at this hotel and I'm like, I know that I've been here. I know this hotel. And a guy comes up and goes, you're trying to figure out where you're at? And I go, yeah. And he goes, it's the Dumb and Dumber Hotel. And I go, oh my God, the Shining Hotel is the Dumb and Dumber Hotel? Which is one of my favorite movie pieces of trivia ever.
We shot it at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park.
Which is fantastic.
It was an amazing place. And by the way, supposed to be haunted. And people, like, I remember half the crew members were like, what the hell? Like, there were odd things happening.
It inspired one of the greatest novels of all time. I want to talk about the comedic genius of John Cena. And one of the things I love about him is he's one of those actors who I would not expect to be as funny as he is, but he is unbelievably funny. And I feel like you have a couple of actors who always surprise me at how funny they are. William H. Macy being one of them, Greg Kinnear being one of them, Jeff Daniels being one of them. I mean, obviously, it does not surprise me that Ben Stiller is funny in your movies, and Jim Carrey and Jack Black are funny in your movies. But I want to talk about those actors that you don't expect to be funny. I'm sort of curious, do they surprise you in that sense? And do those sort of actors have any kind of a commonality, a common thread between them? Because I'm always in awe of how funny they actually are.
No, that's a great question, because, I always believe that any great actor can do comedy or drama. They could do it all. Mm-hmm. And the studios, starting with Dumb and Dumber, we wanted Jeff Daniels badly, because one of my all-time favorite movies to this day is Something Wild. And that's the movie I go to on a rainy day where I'm like, I want to cheer up. That movie makes me happy. I love the colors. I love the music. I love the vibe. I love everything about that movie. In fact, that movie influenced me more than any movie. Like, I tried to get Tak Fujimoto, who was the DP, to be on ours. And he goes, "What's the movie?" I said, "Dumb and Dumber." He said, "No, thanks." But I basically told my DP, Mark Irwin, I said, "Look, watch that movie. Those are the colors. That's the look. That's what I'm trying to get here." And musically, I love the music in that, and I was inspired by it. In fact, right down to, they pick up hitchhikers, like some Hispanic hitchhikers in that movie, and sing a song, and we have it just right out of that movie. But in any case, Jeff Daniels was so funny in that movie, and the whole time I had that script, I saw Jeff Daniels in it. But when I mentioned to the studio, they're like, no, we got to get a comedic actor. I said, why? He's not writing it. He's just acting it. Jeff Daniels, and watch Purple Rose of Cairo. He knows comedy anyway.
Yeah.
And they were like, no. And then finally we had to have Jim Reed with him. They made him come in and read, which I was embarrassed about. I would never have Jeff Daniels read. He earned, just to get an offer. But he read. And I remember he walked out, and Jim was like, "That's the guy." He goes, "That guy scared me." He goes, "He had me on my heels the whole time."
Oh, he's wow.
Like, yeah. Jeff freaked him out. Like, he was pushing back in ways where Jim being Jim, you had to be pretty sharp to push Jim back. And he was, because that is the guy. And by the way, so then the studio, we said Jim wants him, and now they're like in a bad spot because Jim's a star and he has more say than we do on our first movie. And they offered, at that time, Jim got the most money anybody had ever gotten for a comedy, $7 million.
Okay.
That broke the record. Jim's getting $7 million. So they offered Jeff $50,000.
Oh my God.
Figuring he'd just pass, but he didn't.
Yeah.
He said, okay, 50 grand. Didn't push back. Did it for 50. Had a back end. Made a lot of money. But since then, to answer your question, like, I always recognize, like, you get a great actor, they can do anything. And that's William H. Macy, of course, is, he's already done comedies and stuff. But yeah, it's a no-brainer. Guys like that, they could do it. And as far as Cena goes, I saw Cena in Peacemaker, and I was 10 minutes into it, I'm like, that guy is unbelievable. And I wanted him immediately. He is so good in that movie. I had that show.
So good.
He's kind of fearless. He's up to doing anything.
It's exactly right. He's brave as hell. He goes for it. He's not afraid to embarrass himself. And that's what the great actors do. The great comedy actors, they have to, you got to just say the hell with it. And it doesn't always work. But if it doesn't, you cut it. And he's that guy.
I want to ask you, sort of flipping the script of what Jake just asked you, because he's in Chicago. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we like to call the home of Shallow Hal.
Yeah.
And I revisit that movie often, specifically to look at local locations where you shot. But I'm reminded that Gwyneth Paltrow gave such an incredible performance in that film. Like, once you realize what she's playing, which takes you a second viewing probably to get back and understand all the nuances she's bringing. I'm not blowing smoke when I tell you that, like, it deserves awards consideration. Like, she's that good, and comedy doesn't get looked at that way. Like, how often did you take a look at some of the performances that were, overlooked in your films and just thought, like, this person is doing things that she's not getting the credit for?
Well, we never expected that to get, because we wanted to be the Zucker brothers. Those are the guys that we grew up. you know, idolizing, and we wanted to do that kind of, you know, their movies and comedies like that. So, you know, it never occurred to us to get any kind of thing. But I do remember thinking a couple times where, wow, you know, that didn't get enough attention, which is Bill Murray in Kingpin. He could have been best supporting actor, because he, without Bill Murray, first of all, I love that movie and I love everybody in it. But Bill Murray, it does exactly what a best supporting actor does. He elevates the movie in a whole different way. And that movie's not the same without him. The other guys couldn't be better, by the way, but Bill made the movie what it is, and he should have gotten some kind of a thing. And then I also thought, like, you know, musically in Something About Mary, you know, it's hard to believe that Jonathan Richman and, you know, wouldn't have gotten something for playing, you know, the Greek chorus, because that was such an important part of the movie. It pushed it along in really interesting ways. He should have gotten something. But yeah, we didn't really think about it much.
Yeah, I understand.
It's deserving. You've brought up Dumb and Dumber a couple of times, and obviously it's the 30th anniversary. But it's also the 30th anniversary of, obviously, 1994, in which Jim Carrey in 1 year had Ace Ventura, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber all come out in 1 year, which is just sort of insane to think about. It's not a thing that even really happens these days. I'm sort of curious what you remember about that year, being a part of that year, and sort of watching that happen to Jim in that way.
Well, first of all, I felt like nobody deserved it more than Jim Carrey, because he was the funniest guy on the planet, and is to this day, to my mind. There's nobody funnier than Jim Carrey. When he wants to be funny, man, it's just unbelievable. So I was really happy for him, but also because, well, we might not be sitting here if Jim Carrey didn't exist. I'm telling you the truth. I'm sitting there 5 years with Dumb and Dumber. Every actor in town passed on it. Every studio passed on it. Like, to this, you know, for many years, I'd bump into somebody and they'd say, hey, how come you never offered me something? I said, I offered you Dumb and Dumber. You passed. And they'd be like, and what I realized earlier is they didn't pass. Their agents passed. Mm. They all passed. They see Dumb and Dumber. They think, no, I'm not sending that to my client. He'll fire me. Mm. So at one point we had changed the title because we realized the title was keeping people from reading it. And we changed it to A Power Tool Is Not a Toy. And a Power Tool Is Not a Toy. And it was sort of, like, you know, it came from it was a song by the Young Adults, a Providence band. And it was and it made people think, oh, this is a cool thing. Eh, that's kind of hip. Let's read this. Yeah. They did. Yeah. And once we made it, we mentioned to Jim, we said, you know, this used to be called Dumb and Dumber. He goes, well, that's what it should be called. Why'd you change it? I said, because no one would read it. You know, we went back to Dumb and Dumber. But,
oh, my God.
I was so happy for Jim because he deserved it. I felt like we were riding the train and we were happy to be there. But it did actually, after that, because it was Jim Carrey, when we went to do Kingpin, our next movie, it wasn't easy because they're like, even though we just had a monster hit, they're like, yeah, well, that's Jim Carrey. It's like, well, we wrote it, you know, directed it. And he's like, yeah, but it's Jim Carrey, you know? But in any case, it was nice to be in Jim's orbit at that time. And Lauren Holly, you know, we had such a great time. They had a great thing on the set. It was a lot of fun, a lot of laughs. Couldn't have been better.
Well, his performance in Me, Myself, and Irene also belongs in the top five conversations of things that Jim Carrey has done. He's off the charts in that.
Yeah,
we are running out of time. We know you have a hard out, but we play something fun on this game. We want to run it past you.
Sure.
The movie is Ricky Stenicki. Obviously, we're sending everybody to go see it. But on Internet Movie Database, they have four movies at the top of everybody's page that, quote unquote, best represents the person's career. When we play it, our producer will give us someone's name. We'll try to guess the four. I want you to try to guess the four movies that you think are at the top of your IMDb page.
Oh, God.
Now, keep in mind, I'll just give you this caveat. It could be it could be director. It could be producer as well, too. And it's funny because it's never what you're thinking.
Oh, OK. Well, then I'm going to say Movie 43 is up there.
Okay. Okay.
There Is Something About Mary.
Okay.
Dumb and Dumber.
Okay.
And I guess Green Book.
Holy shit, Peter Farrelly, you nailed all four.
You're the first one to hit a grand slam.
You nailed all four. There's no way you're getting movie 43. That's unbelievable. Wow. I've never seen that
before. No one's ever gotten that four before.
I stand by movie 43. You can't believe the shit we got for that movie. When that came out, there was like, it was that no movie ever got bombed like that. But the ones I did in it, like the, and if you look at the people who worked on that movie, it's crazy. And the act in it. But the ones I do, like, especially the one, you know, with Kate Winslet, like that, and Hugh Jackman, I love that. I could watch that all day long. I've never been prouder. That's right. Play that at my funeral.
Well, congratulations on this new film, and we really appreciate you coming on the show, Peter. It was a great time talking with you.
I really appreciate it, Sean and Jake and Gabe and everybody. Thanks for everything.
We want to thank our good friends at Amazon Prime Video and, of course, Peter Farrelly for coming on the show. You guys should definitely give Ricky Stanicky a chance, especially if you like the earlier types of Farrelly Brother comedies like Stuck on You. It doesn't rise to the level of like a Dumb and Dumber or There's Something About Mary, but there's plenty of laughs to be had inside of this goofy premise where a group of friends would always pretend that they were going to meet their childhood friend, Ricky Stanicky. And so they would tell their families that we're going to go see this guy. And then they come up with this elaborate ruse that like, he's in the hospital and they have to go visit him, but it's been this imaginary friend they've been leaning on forever. And when they kind of get caught in the lie, they have to hire somebody to finally play their childhood friend, Ricky Stanicky. And that's where they bring John Cena in. It's a loose premise for them to set up a number of really inspired visual gags. You'll get a couple of laughs out of it. Put it on Amazon Prime. But like kind of like what I said, when you get someone like Peter Farrelly to talk about their latest film, and I hope you guys sort of realize this as well, too. Over the course of his interview, he kept wanting to bring up Dumb and Dumber and his collaborations with Jim Carrey. And you have to sort of go back and get into those films while you have the opportunity to speak to him. So I was really, really happy that he took the time to open up. And I'm really, really glad that we got him on the show. We did mention that March is Dune Blend. And hopefully you've checked out our interviews with cinematographer Greg Fraser up to this point. And of course, the director of Dune Part 2, Denis Villeneuve. Those episodes are available to you right now. Rebecca Ferguson is going to be on the main show. She's a tremendous, tremendous conversation. And then Dune Blend is going to wrap with the legend himself, Hans Zimmer, returning to the show. So make sure that you keep it here on Real Blend so that you get the instant access to all that amazing content. You do that by hitting subscribe, turning on your notifications, chiming in the comments down below, and following us through all of our cinematic adventures. Thank you again to Peter Farrelly for coming by. Thank you to you guys for listening to this new episode, and we'll be back with more Real Blend soon enough.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.